Cause you're a sky, cause you're a sky full of stars. I'm gonna give you my heart.
Welcome to the AAA's July 2017 podcast. As my Auntie Edna used to say at this time of year, the longest day has passed away, prepare for the longest night. On June the 21st, at 5:20 British summer time, the sun, which had been steadily moving north since late December, stopped and began to move south. Of course, it is not the sun that moves, it is the earth. The earth rotates about an axis which is inclined to the plane of its orbit by approximately 23.5 degrees. At the moment, the earth is near the point in its orbit where the North Pole is leaning towards the sun, with the result that the pole receives 24 hours of daylight. In Suffolk, we are too far south to experience the midnight sun, but nevertheless, at midsummer, we receive nearly 16.75 hours of daylight. For a few weeks, we will not notice much change, but all too soon you will hear someone comment, "The nights are beginning to draw in." The good news, of course, for astronomers is that the hours of darkness will be increasing so that the night sky will become properly dark again. This month, the moon will be at its first quarter on July the 1st and again on July the 30th. It will be full on July the 9th, at its last quarter on July the 16th, and will be back to new on July the 23rd. The moon orbits the Earth in 27.32 days when measured by its position relative to the fixed star background. This is shorter than the days of the months. Even February has 28 days. If a particular moon phase occurs at the beginning of the month, as will happen this July, it will be repeated before the end of the month. It is worth remembering that the moon phase is dependent on its position in its orbit. The moon will present at first quarter when it is approximately 90 degrees from the sun in the azimuth dimension. Therefore, at sunset, on the nights of first quarter when the sun is setting in the west, the moon will be found in the south. Similarly, when the moon is full, it will be approximately 180 degrees from the sun and will be found in the east, rising roughly at the time the sun sets. And at last quarter, the moon will not rise until after the sun has set. This is why casual astronomers are more familiar with the moon in its first quarter aspect, as it presents itself at a more convenient time for observing. The terminator, the line between the illuminated and dark portions of the moon, is where the sun is rising. The sun is shining obliquely on this strip of moon, throwing long and spectacular shadows of the moon's features. I find it fascinating to watch the changes in the shadows as the sun slowly rises in the lunar sky. Tops of mountains become illuminated before the lower slopes as the sun gradually rises. Jupiter this month remains prominent in the early evening sky, but will soon be lost in the haze of sunset. At sunset, it is easily found in the southwest, and the great red spot can still be detected with a telescope of 150 millimetres or greater. It will transit the planet's disk on July the 6th at 22:20 British summer time, July the 11th at 21:29 British summer time, and July the 23rd at 21:28 British summer time. Saturn is to be found low in the south in Ophiuchus. Its current position in its orbit means that it will remain low in the sky during this apparition. Nevertheless, it presents a pleasing aspect when seen through a telescope, as its rings are wide open. When planning an observing session, Consult a planetarium program such as Stellarium, which will indicate the positions of the brighter of Saturn's moons, helping you to spot them. This is the time of year to observe the constellations Scorpius and Sagittarius. They are part of the zodiac, and thus are constellations that the Sun appears to pass through during its annual perambulation around the sky. The path of this journey is known as the ecliptic. At this time of year, when observed from our part of the world, it is at its highest in the sky at noon. Correspondingly, it is at its lowest in the sky at midnight. Scorpius and Sagittarius are to be found on this part of the ecliptic, and so are only visible around midsummer, and even then do not climb very high in the sky. This is unfortunate, as Sagittarius lies in the direction of the centre of our galaxy, the Milky Way. On a clear night, the Milky Way can be seen climbing up from Sagittarius in the direction of the summer triangle. But from our latitude, the view is marred by the midsummer sky never becoming really dark. Nevertheless, it is worth scanning Scorpius and Sagittarius with a pair of binoculars, as there are many gas clouds and star clusters to be found. Only part of Scorpius can be seen from our latitude. The most obvious part is the Scorpion's claw, centred on the red giant star Antares. Antares means rival of Mars, and, as the ecliptic is close by, Mars is sometimes seen passing Antares, a red giant and the red planet competing for prominence. Sadly, this pairing is not in evidence at the moment. Sagittarius the Archer presents as an asterism very like a teapot, so much so that it is unmistakable. It contains two spectacular nebulae. The Lagoon Nebula is a stellar nursery, otherwise known as M8, the eighth object in Messier's famous catalogue. Through a telescope, it is seen to contain a star cluster. To locate it, find the teapot lid. From the star that marks the left-hand base of the lid, move upwards to the star that marks the apex of the lid. Continue in the same direction for the same distance, and you will be in the vicinity of the lagoon. Approximately 1.5 degrees north of the lagoon is another nebula, the Trifid, the 20th object in Messier's catalogue. This is another star-forming region. Images show it to be divided by a dark nebula into three lobes and contains a star cluster and glowing gas clouds. Part of the gas cloud glows as a result of reflected starlight, whilst another part glows because of photon emissions. If you manage to imagine Sagittarius as an archer who is shooting his arrows upwards, then you can follow the flight of one past the star Altair into the summer triangle, where you will find Sagittar the Arrow, a small constellation we met last month. The summer triangle and the constellations of which it is composed contain a number of interesting nebulae. The term nebula means cloud, and many different types of celestial objects have been classified as nebulae in the days before we had the knowledge to define them more precisely. This month we have already visited two gas cloud nebula. A third is to be found in Cygnus the Swan, about 4 degrees east of the summer triangle star Deneb. It is known as the North American Nebula, because its shape puts one in mind of the Gulf of Mexico and the southern states. It is a large object and therefore best seen in a wide field telescope or binoculars, as it can easily be missed in a telescope. This is a situation where the light grasp of your instrument is much more important than its magnification. When your eyes are fully dark adapted, and when the air is clear, it can be seen with the naked eye.
Another type of nebula is the Veil. It is the remnant of a supernova and is in two parts, the Eastern Veil and the Western Veil. These are not in Messier's catalogue but in Patrick Moore's. Patrick used his middle name Caldwell to avoid confusion with Messier, so objects in his catalogue are assigned the letter C rather than M. The Eastern Veil is C33 and the Western C34. C34 is marked by the star 52 Cygni, which passes through it, while C33, which is easier to see, lies 2.5 degrees east of 52 Cygni. The star can be found at right ascension 20 hours 46.4 minutes, declination plus 30 degrees 47 minutes. Next month, we will find some examples of another type of nebula, the planetary. Until then, I wish you clear skies.